My guest at this time is Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King. His state is at the center of the U.S. political universe today as the first real votes of the 2012 campaign are cast in the Hawkeye State. All eyes obviously on the Republican caucus since President Obama is unchallenged for the Democratic nomination there. And six candidates campaigning furiously for final votes. Former Utah Governor John Huntsman sitting it out. And Congressman, it's always good to have you with us. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year. It's good to be back with you. It's been a pretty busy past transfer over there from the old year to the new here.
It certainly has, and Iowa certainly getting its feet wet in the 2012 campaign just 3 days into the new year. You and I have talked many times about this race over the past several months. You have a lot of personal friends in this race. Ultimately, in the last couple of days, you've decided not to endorse anyone. Was it because there are a number of people that you couldn't decide between, or something lacking there?
Well, it was some of each, and there's several components here. I don't know that I have it completely analyzed, but there's a series of people that are friends that I've worked with for a long time competing against each other. That's a piece of it. You're always a little more reluctant to if you give a nod to one friend, you've given the cold shoulder to a couple others. That was a part of it, but there's also something that just didn't quite come together for me. I could not reach a conviction. And endorsements differ than going to the caucus and putting up a vote. An endorsement has to carry with it a conviction. And so I didn't get to that conviction. I think there's some things that the presidential candidates need to work out yet and get established if they're going to. And one of them is to be able to articulate the breadth and the depth and the scope of the financial situation this country's in, lay out a plan by which we can begin to pay off the first net dollar on our national debt on the path to paying it down substantially and off, hopefully. It isn't good enough just to say our America is in trouble. You have to identify it, you have to convince the American people, and then you have to convince the American people that they are willing to tighten their belts and do a shared sacrifice to get this solved. And then the other piece that seems to be missing to me is the shining city on the hill image. Ronald Reagan understood it. We might not have always understood what was in his mind, but we knew he knew. And those pieces just aren't quite there. And because of not great distinctions between the individual candidates either, many of them take good positions. And so I just didn't come to that point where I could say I'm throwing all my energy behind one candidate because if we fail to succeed, it's going to be a great price to America. There's pros and cons to each one of the candidates that are out there, and I have great respect for them all.
Congressman, obviously, I'm sure you'll be supporting the nominee, whoever it is, eventually. Is there anyone in this group, though, that you're less satisfied with than the rest? Anyone you particularly don't want to see win today?
Well, I'd only say that in this way, and that is that there's, again, good things in all of them. I have been very clear that I'm substantially concerned about Ron Paul's foreign policy position, which would move all of our military back to the United States, inside the United States borders. That would be a calamity that we could not recover from. It would be something we would pay for 100 and more than 100 years from now. America's destiny would be altered, I think, immediately. And so that one does concern me a great deal. That's not a position that I can rationalize, nor can I understand anyone rationalizing that position. And so aside from that, the other candidates, I could go up and down the line and tell you the good things about them, their strengths. And today, as people are about ready to cast their ballots, I'm not all that interested in discussing any weaknesses they might have. But they are good people, and for the most part, I'm impressed with them all.
In terms of the folks that you've talked with, your own constituents and other Iowans that you've met with as you've traveled around with various candidates, do you get the sense that there is a fervor among Republicans to for their particular candidates or at least for defeating Barack Obama?
Well, there's been a significant amount of energy at these events, and you can measure that. There's a lot of energy to defeat Barack Obama. And then if you look at the crowds, Rick Santorum is drawing good crowds, and Mitt Romney is drawing good crowds. I just came from an event a little earlier today that was out at the Valley High School, and there were good crowds there and good crowds of media wherever. It's almost normal process now to walk around the city and expect there to be quite a gaggle of video cameras and reporters around you. So it is a pretty intense time here, but, you know, in a couple of days, they're going to be moved on. And I talked to one reporter that's got the 6 a.m. flight to Manchester, New Hampshire tomorrow morning.
In terms of Iowa's role here, obviously it's first in the nation. Only one major candidate is not actively participating. Yet you have a lot of folks out there saying only three times since 1976 has the winner of Iowa won the nomination. How significant is Iowa's role in this nominating process?
Well, I'm wondering where they come up with that data. I can think of three times right off the top of my head. And that would be, let's see, I thought I could anyway. Jimmy Carter would be one, and Barack Obama would be another. That's two of them right off the bat. And, you know, here's some other way that the Iowa caucus has made history. Ronald Reagan, after Jimmy Carter won the presidency and was launched into it by his strength of his Iowa caucus victory, Ronald Reagan didn't take Iowa seriously, and when he didn't, he lost to George H.W. Bush, who later became the vice president. Of course, Reagan did win the presidency, and he pivoted his race in New Hampshire, took it seriously. And so once we had George H.W. Bush as a vice president, he would not have been nominated VP if he had not won Iowa. They were looking at Gerald Ford, if you remember, and later on became the president and then the father of a president. So the entire Bush legacy might have not have taken place if it hadn't been for Iowa. And, you know, then you look along the line, and it's always altered the sequence of events, and it's always had a significant role in who would be the eventual nominee. And when Ronald Reagan didn't take it seriously, it almost cost him the nomination, and that's what his family and his campaign workers thought at the time.
Couple quick questions remaining with Iowa Congressman Steve King. And Congressman, you mentioned earlier that the biggest concern for you, and I'm sure many voters in Iowa and across the country, is the state of the nation's fiscal health. Over the holidays, President Obama asked for a $1.2 trillion extension of the debt ceiling, and that's obviously just a few months after the huge fight that happened over the summer, where you split from your own party's leadership in how that ought to be addressed. What do you plan to do when this comes up, when the House reconvenes, and what do you expect to happen?
Well, we're pushing on the agenda now, wanting to have this debate and vote in the House in such a way that we have an opportunity to vote down the president's request to increase the debt ceiling. The way they structured the debt ceiling deal back in August was that the president could request the debt ceiling increases, and they was going to get them unless the House passed a resolution of disapproval of the president's request. And that would have to pass the House. And the Senate, and then it would go to the president's desk, where the president, if he wanted the debt ceiling increase, could just simply veto the resolution of disapproval. It set the deck up in the wrong way, stacked it against us. But I want that vote, and I want to hope that they'll vote that down in the United States Senate. That's a lot tougher thing to do. We need to have the time to bring back a veto override attempt if we can get that done. And I don't see our leadership planning that kind of strategy. They just simply are willing to apparently let the president make his request, and maybe we get there in time to do a pro forma vote on the debt ceiling deal. But I don't think that we're positioned right now to block that money from going to the president.
Congressman, a lot of folks are wondering, especially in the wake of the failure of the super committee to even trim increases in projected spending, whether or not members of Congress are ready to toe the line and say no more additional spending, almost a zero-sum game, actual cuts from here on out. What do you say in response to that? How prepared are you to make a commitment like that?
Well, you know, it's hard to put just a formula to it like that. What is the definition of new spending? Is it beyond the authorized? Is it beyond the baseline spending, which is the projected increase in spending? Or is it freezing every account and at the current levels? So I'm for everything we can do that'll work to get this spending down. When I hear Ron Paul talk about cutting $1 trillion out of next year's budget, I'm glad he's talking about that. I disagree with him on foreign policy, but I'm glad he's pushing hard on that. And I'm hearing the other candidates say more. We just aren't there yet. But it's going to take a president to lead on this. Whatever we say that we're going to do next year, if we're not willing to cut in the first year, in the year we can really make a difference, if we promise our cuts in the out years, that's not conviction. That's not a solution. If every Congress does that, we'll just simply have things piling up ahead of us, and debt will pile upon debt, and it'll never end.
Well, Congressman, we'll let you run. I know it's an exhausting but fun day for you. Enjoy your state's last day here in the limelight before everything shifts to New Hampshire, and thank you very much for your time today.
So thanks for having a chat with me. I appreciate it, Greg.
As always, sir. Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King represents his state's 5th Congressional District. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.